The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
All right, it's Chris Jericho here, and it's HBK week on Talk is Jericho. Yeah, that's right. Highly requested once again. Seems like every week I get a highly requested guest on this show, but this one for sure, one of the biggest requested guests I've ever had from a lot of people out there on the Twitter. HBK Shawn Michaels is here, the Heartbreak Kid. Part one today, part two on Friday. We're talking about everything involving our classic 2008 angle. Not only the greatest angle I was ever in, but in my opinion, one of the greatest angles in WWE history. And that's backed up by many, many officials in the biz. We're going to also be talking about the Montreal Screwjob, the angle where I punched Shawn's wife, Rebecca, actually was real. We'll talk all about that. We'll talk Shawn's relationship with Vince McMahon. Man, Daniel Bryan, the amazing Pat Patterson, and the evolution of the HBK character. We've been friends for a long time, rivals for a long time. I actually drove to his ranch in the middle of Texas. Had a hard time finding it. It's not on the GPS, but I did find it.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride.
Frankin' Chicken.
He's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken. Bark, bark. Frankin' Chicken.
He's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken.
Bark, bark.
Frankin' Chicken.
He's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken. Bark, bark. Frankin' Chicken.
He's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken. Bark, bark.
All right, don't forget the evil of the Franken chicken ruling across the land. I bet you even Zach Bagans would be scared of the Franken chicken. And I have to do a little editor's note. Apparently, I was pronouncing his name wrong. It's not Zach Baggins like Bilbo Baggins. It's Zach Bagans. So for everybody who's busting me on the pronunciation, A, I'm from Canada, so I can pronounce anything the way I want. Again, that's it's not again. It's again. No. It's again because that's how we say it. So Zach Bagans, not Baggins. I get it. I learned my lesson, and don't haunt me and don't put curses on me. And if you are going to put a curse on me, I have a peace offering. I have one of the greatest guests, the greatest performer in WWE history. HBK is here on Talk is Jericho this whole week on today's show, Friday's show. This conversation is so big, I needed two shows to get it all in. And believe me, we covered everything, some serious ground. The Montreal Screwjob and Bret the Hitman Hart, the Rockers tag team, his amazing matches with The Undertaker, my favorite pro wrestling matches that I've ever seen in my life, and of course the 2008 angle that he and I did together, which once again is my favorite angle I've ever had in my entire career. No doubt about it. The way it came together, the way it was nurtured and carried out by Shawn and myself, we pretty much wrote the whole thing on a week-by-week basis. We're going to talk all about it. You're going to hear everything behind the scenes about Jericho Michaels coming up. So the big talk is the 2015 Grammy Awards. Always a big spectacle, always controversy in a way. A lot of people talking about it after, who was good, who was bad, what happened, what didn't happen. This year, much more the same. I think the Grammys has never really been about rock and roll. It's kind of about what's just trendy at the time. And you can see that every year. I mean, obviously this year, Sam Smith was the big winner. I think Sam has like one song, and I hear it all the time on Hits 1 when I'm with my kids, and it's Stay With Me. One record of the year, one song of the year, best new artists. It's like whenever they find somebody new that they want to push, they just kind of go over the top in adulation for these guys. I don't really know much about Sam Smith, and I don't know. Will he have the staying power? You know, if you look at last year's record of the year was Get Lucky, Daft Punk. I mean, probably haven't made a new record yet for a while, but I think Daft Punk is pretty much ensconced in their career. They've been around for a long time. Last year's Song of the Year was Lordy Royals. That was really trendy. I remember everyone was kind of jumping on her tip, you know, the 16-year-old sensation and this, that, and the other thing. Is she's singing with Nirvana at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And, you know, there's a lot of trendiness. It's a lot like Hollywood, and the Grammys is very much the boys club, girls club, what's trendy, what's hot, what's everyone wearing. I mean, come on, man, it's rock and roll. You should be wearing, you know, a scarf and some ratty jeans and a big top hat and, you know, shades and a leather jacket and a safety pin through your nose. I mean, that's what I want to see who's wearing, not like, oh, and here comes Taylor Swift wearing a Chelsea, the Sergio Giorgini gown. It's like, no, it's not what it's about. And then last year's new artist was Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Haven't heard anything about them. You know, like I said, I mean, 10 years from now, will we be talking about Macklemore and Sam Smith and Lordy in the same way that we talk about U2 and the Stones and, you know, McCartney? If you even look back, it's like, who are the big pop songstresses that came out about 5 years ago? It was the birth of Katy Perry, and it was the birth of Lady Gaga. Now, here we are 5 years later, let's say, give or take a few years, and Katy Perry is super, super huge, and Gaga's not. She's kind of gone down a bit. Her big thing at the Grammys this year was clinging on to Tony Bennett, like just like some kind of a, you know, like a gold digger, like an old one of them chicks who marries an old guy who hopes that he like dies so she can get all his money. And I know that's not the case, but I mean, Gaga's like, she was just super hanging on to him like some kind of slut or something like that in the front row, just going nuts. When I mean, it was pretty cool when it was kicked off by AC/DC. I mean, that was awesome. You knew that would be great. And it's funny because a lot of people were complaining that the tempo of Highway to Hell was slower, and it wasn't. It was just more of a laid back groove. It wasn't like it was that much slower or anything along those lines. And of course, they played Rock or Bust, which a lot of people are like, I don't even know that song. What's a new song? I mean, that's what you do. You play a new song and an old song. Most important thing for me was I got to see Talk Is Jericho alumni and my friend Chris Slade behind the kit with the classic Chris Slade drum kit with the two floor toms kind of jacked up by his ears. And if you saw that, that's something that you would never see at an AC/DC gig. That's a Chris Slade classic trademark drum kit. So, I mean, it was cool to see that. And I think that, you know, a lot of people were kind of confused as to what was going on with AC/DC. Like, who are these old guys just rocking up here? You know, Angus is running around going nuts. And, you know, I mean, that's rock and roll. You know, that's the epitome of rock and roll. And if you saw who was in the front row going nuts for that, was Paul McCartney. I mean, Paul knows. I'd like to see that meeting, Angus and Paul, to see like what would they talk about? Did they talk? Did they not talk? Whatever it may be, but it was great to see that part of it. That's the rock and roll element. Now, of course, AC/DC's there because it's trendy to like AC/DC right now. Like, you'd never see Iron Maiden. You might see Metallica or the Foo Fighters or DC. Those are kind of like your corporately branded rock bands that it's like it's okay to put them on the Grammys. But like an Iron Maiden or something, like, forget it. Like Avenged Sevenfold, you'll never see it. You know, at least now. Maybe in a few years you will. The thing that it brings me to my point of the best metal performance, won by Tenacious D, The Last in Line. Now, I love Tenacious D. Do not get me wrong. And don't send me any hater Twitters or tweets or whatever, Facebooking. I love Tenacious D. I'm a big fan of Jack Black's vocals. I'm a big fan of Jack Black. And I think they do a tremendous, tremendous job. But when you're talking about them winning a Grammy, okay, a Grammy. Now, come on, man. I mean, I know there was Mastodon was in there and, you know, Anthrax is there. Slipknot. I mean, to me, Slipknot should win. They're an arena act. They're selling out arenas. They've been away for a few years. That's a legitimate band that should win the best metal performance, okay? Now, Anthrax, another amazing band, nominated for a cover. Neon Knights from the Dio tribute record. Last in Line from the Dio tribute record, Tenacious D wins. So it seems to me that like the Grammy committee in their infinite wisdom got like three metal albums out of the closet. And so there's a Slipknot, there's a Mastodon, there's a Dio tribute. Let's take both of those and just pick a couple random guys. Now, of course, Jack Black is a Hollywood superstar. He's an A-lister. So let's give him the Grammy. It's good credibility for the show. It's terrible credibility for the best metal performance. And like I said, this is not a cut down on Tenacious D. I love Tenacious D, but to see them win the Grammy is just as ludicrous to me to see Motorhead win the Grammy a few years ago. For what? For Enter Sandman, a cover that they did. Motorhead won their only Grammy for a cover of a Metallica song. Okay? Why is that? Because the Grammy committee knows Metallica. They're one of the agreed upon cliched metal bands that could be used. Like we said, AC/DC, Foo Fighters, Metallica. So Motorhead was up for a Grammy this year as well for one of the original songs. We don't want that. We just know that Metallica song, give it to Motorhead. Now, the funny thing about this whole thing is that years ago, when the first award for metal performance was given out, I believe it was 1989, 88, sometime around there, Metallica was just beginning their huge, huge rise, and they were already super popular. They were up for the Grammy, and the winner that year was Jethro Tull, who beat, I believe it was Injustice for All, for their album, which was called Crest of a Knave. And it was ridiculous. It was like Jethro Tull beat Metallica for the Grammy for best metal performance in 1989 or 88 or 90, somewhere in there, when Metallica was becoming the behemoth Metallica. So that just kind of showed the ridiculousness of the Grammy committee. And then fast forward 1 year, Metallica does win the Grammy for a cover of Queen's Stone Cold Crazy. Okay? So it's like, I remember Lars said, we just want to say thank you to Jethro Tull for not releasing an album this year. And that just kind of shows like this is so stupid. Like Metallica is up for the Grammy, the first Grammy for metal. Don't win, Jethro Tull does. And then the Grammy committee has to play catch up. Oh my God, we look really bad. We got egg on our face. Just nominate Metallica next year. But they don't have an album out. Oh, we don't care. Did they release a song? Well, they did this Queen cover. There you go. They win the Grammy. So I mean, it really means nothing. Now, having said that, if Fozzy won a Grammy for, you know, our cover of SOS, I'd be up on the front row and I'd be there and I'd be accepting my award and I wouldn't be talking this right now. I'd shut up and take it. But just watching as a metal fan and also as a guy who understands how things work, how Hollywood works, how big business works. Okay, it's better to give it to Jack Black than to give it to Lemmy or give it to these masked guys in Slipknot who we don't even know who they are. So it's not a credible thing to get. It's a really cool ornament that you can use to put in your house. It gives you a chance to say, I'm a Grammy Award winner. Funny story to end this part of the segment. A couple years ago, I hosted the Metal Hammer Awards in London, and Bron Daler was there, who's the drummer of Mastodon, and he was wearing a shirt that he had made out of those 70s shirts that you would get where you would press the letters on? You know, Arnold wore one that said Arnold is numero uno in Pumping Iron. Bron had a shirt that said, two-time Grammy Award loser, because they'd been nominated for two Grammys. So now he can say three-time Grammy Award loser. All right. But like I said, if I did get nominated for a Grammy and I won one and I was up on the stage accepting it and Kanye West came up to talk his bull, I'll tell you one thing. I read an amazing tweet from Paul Stanley, my friend, alumni of Talk is Jericho, who said, if Kanye West came up on stage while I was accepting a Grammy, I would kick him in the nuts and say, get the fuck off my stage. And that is probably the best line I've ever heard in my life, especially if you think about the Star Child, like, you know, Paul Stanley, kind of the ultimate lover, you know, like the androgynous lover. He's going to kick Kanye West in the balls, and deservedly so. You know what I mean? Like, if he came up on stage when I was up there, he'd be going back down those stairs on his back. There's no doubt about it. Actually, Zach Wilde posted another great meme on Instagram that said, I pray to God I win a Grammy someday. You know? And that's like, what and this is what I don't understand, okay? Now, Kanye did this a couple years ago with Taylor Swift. Beyonce should have won, whatever. I don't know if he's high or if he's drunk. He can't possibly be so egotistical as to think he's just allowed to walk on stage whenever he wants. Problem is, he probably does feel that way. But that, to me, it's not funny. It's not entertaining. It's not rebellious. It's not pushing the envelope. It's plain disrespect, complete disrespect. Now, disrespect amongst your peers is the ultimate sin. Now, I'm not hating on Kanye because he's a rap guy. I'm not a rap guy. I've got ultimate respect for rap artists. Trust me, nothing but respect. You know DMC, Talk is Jericho alumni. Nothing but respect for DMC. Nothing but respect for Bone Crusher, who did some track with us back on the All That Remains record called It's a Lie. Jay-Z, anybody, you know, Beyonce, whoever. And even Kanye, if he would just shut up and keep his mouth shut and not feel that he has to be the center of attention and completely disrespect Beck, completely disrespect Taylor Swift, and basically shit on the entire music business, he does not have that right, okay? So that's why I have a real issue with Kanye West, to where I have no interest in anything that he does, and it's not because of his music. He could be a genius. I hope he is. He might be an amazing genius. I know he says he's a genius, which led to another thing that Paul posted on Instagram, where he had a picture of Kanye and a picture of Hendrix next to each other, and a quote from each. And Kanye was, "I'm a creative genius." That's the only way you can say it. I mean, it's obvious. And Hendrix's quote was, "I don't like it when people say I'm a genius. I don't think I'm the best at what I do. I don't like compliments. It distracts me from my playing." Right? There you go. That's the difference. That's the yin and yang of rock and roll. And it's the ultimate show of respect to go to an award show or go to a gig or anything like that and sit back and watch people do what they do best. And if they get an award, some kind of accolade, you cheer for them whether you like what they do or not. Walking on stage, I don't care if you would have walked on stage for the winner of the best Latin jazz album. And much respect to the Arturo Orfeo and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra for their amazing offense of the drum. I wouldn't have cared if you walked on stage for that. You do not walk on stage, whether it's a big star or a small star. That's disrespect. It's disrespecting your peers, and it's disrespecting the music that people are making and the amount of effort that they put into it. So Kanye West is now officially on my shit list and gets an official, and it hasn't been one for a while, but he's going to get an official Chris Jericho raspberry. All right, Kanye, this one's for you. And a kick in the nuts from Paul Stanley. Right now, I got to say thanks to all the sponsors of Talk is Jericho, the sexy beasts who let me do this for free for you for twice a week. And thanks to all of you. That's right, you right there, for supporting my great sponsors, including Amazon. Big thanks for doing your online shopping through my Amazon links. It's the easiest way to support the show. You go to podcastone.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the pagey-wagey. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. Remember, every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple buckolas to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada A. Get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon. You know, you can go buy pretty much anything you want. Get the new Black Veil Brides self-titled album, Black Veil Brides 4, featuring Andy Biersack, my buddy who was on last week. Get the new Zach Bagans book, I Am Haunted, from Ghost Adventures, telling all of his crazy, weird things that go bump in the night stories. You might want to check that out, and check out Zach's show last week here on Talk is Jericho as well. You can also get the new Shawn Michaels book, Wrestling for My Life, the legend, the reality and the faith of a WWE superstar. That is out now. Sean's going to talk about his book on today's show and on Friday's show. Also get my new book and my third New York Times bestseller, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. So many great things you can get. Get all those things. Get all of the above. Hey, listen, get anything you want using my Amazon links, no matter what it is. Remember, it's not going to cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or challenges. So if you happen to be doing some online shopping, you do it through my Amazon links. You help out this show in the process. You go to podcastone.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the pagey-wagey. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. You bookmark it so you can get to those links in one easy click. All right, I can't believe it already. The Y2J WWE Winter Tour is almost over. Only two weekends left, this Saturday in Tampa, Florida on Valentine's Day. Come bring your honey to the show and let me entertain you. It'll be your last chance to see me in the ring for a while. There's only five dates left. Another one is Sunday in Fort Myers. And then, of course, on the 27th. in Madison Square Garden, 28th Toronto, and on March 1st in Buffalo, and that's it. And I've had such a great time on this run, just doing the live events, so many amazing shows. St. Louis was a lot of fun, and Houston was great, and had a great time at the last show ever from the WWE in the Izod Center in New Jersey.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
We're here at Shawn Michaels' house, and now I tell you, it's funny because you gave me this, the address.
And my phone's ringing. And it's Keith. You did do the show with left call.
Wow. See, everyone's tracking me down. But you live out here in the middle of nowhere.
Correct.
Like, this is the classic, like, you talk about Texas, like the plains of Texas, like the Wild West. We're in it.
Yeah.
You know, like, how did you?
No, that's the thing. Everybody, it's like, it's got to be a gimmick. Like, no, it's no gimmick. I didn't live here the whole time I was wrestling. Once retirement started coming up, I started looking for what I always wanted, which was a ranch. Mm-hmm. A ranch, and ideally, you know, after X amount of years, sort of, you know, out, you know, in front of people, I'd like to have a ranch out in the middle of nowhere and be away from everything.
It's the ultimate dichotomy, like you said. Like, you performed for years, you know, in front of thousands, and now, like, there's probably, I don't even know if you have neighbors.
Yeah. They are, but they're a long way away,
yeah, right? Yeah. And yep. And you said, you know, I want to make sure that I'm there to open the gate, and I thought maybe you'd have to, like, you know, hit a buzzer or something, but you're actually out there. You have to take a tractor to the gate to actually manually open it.
So we call it the mule. It's not, you know, think it's not a tractor, it's a UTV.
Yeah.
But, you go all the way up. Well, the thing is, you can obviously get, you know, electricity up there and open the gate manually. The problem is, with that kind of gate, you don't have the security of the lock, of the padlock.
Gotcha.
It is, as you can see, it's a very high fence.
Yes.
And it's
barbed wire all over.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. and obviously it's, you know, it's a chain and it's padlocked. I mean, so, you know, you can't get in. So, it is. I mean, you spend a lot of time, you know, at Dingy Chub. We got two new horses. We turned them out a little while ago. You know, we've got two goats now that our daughter's showing in 4-H this year, and I'm gonna be.
Oh, she's showing like a competition. Like,
yeah,
the
yes,
nicest
yeah,
goat?
Yeah, county, yeah,
the county fair,
yeah, the county 4-H, and the thing is, we don't want to do state. Apparently, you know, you go up to the state level, and it's, you know, what, and you go to Houston and it's huge money. I mean, and they got these goats on the gas and stuff like that. It's crazy. Well, my wife and daughter, I mean, Rebecca and Shug went to this goat camp and they're telling them all this stuff. I mean, there's people like in Houston that pay 80, 100 grand for these goats and pigs. Yes. Yes.
You know, it's funny. Like, it doesn't matter. It's whatever type of show business it is, there's always
once
the sort of
big money's in there. Yeah. Something. It's right. You go to performance enhancing drugs.
Well, it's just like, you know, like pumpkin right. growing contest or something.
Exactly.
Like those giant pumpkins right. got to be filled full of something, right?
Exactly. So, but anyway, we're just doing the county level. But yeah, we've been out here for probably 4 years, and I've slowly been. You know, my first year I wanted to learn how to, you know, it's mostly wildlife, you know, taking care of the deer and stuff like that. And, you know, I'll plant some, you know, food plots and I've done, you know, wheat and stuff like that. This year I'm going to talk to a guy about possibly running some cattle and also, you know, so, you know, technically it would be, you know, the same as sharecropping, so to speak, have them come out, because I don't have the time to farm everything.
Right.
But we've got, you know, a couple hundred acres of pastures that can.
Is that what it is, a couple hundred acres?
Well, all together it's 500.
Wow.
But we've got, you know, 200, I think, you know, in basically in pasture that could be.
That you can use to farm.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, so I mean, I'm going to talk to Greg, you know, about that. So just trying to learn. It's, you know what? I mean, it's, you know, all the interests, the different interests you have. You and I have talked about this over the years. you know, obviously mine are obviously more country bumpkinish than yours, but we've always had other interests outside of wrestling. And this to me was one of them. I mean, obviously it's simpler and from a lot of people's, I'm sure, way of life may be boring, but I've always sort of enjoyed trying
this
to learn
is you,
more about
man.
This.
Yeah.
And be just more on my, again, I guess I've always sort of wondered, especially since, whatever my salvation and all that kind of stuff, could I survive?
Mm-hmm.
Could we just, survive on our own? And
well, it's like I said, if there was like some kind of like a zombie apocalypse or like a nuclear war, like I would want to come live with you.
Yeah, well, it's funny. That's what's funny is because Hunter, it was probably 2 years ago, they had a huge blizzard up there prematurely. And Steph called him and like, hey, William, what happens if, all the power's out and if we were to get worse than this, what would we do? And he said, we go to Shaw's. But since that time, he's even started to get himself sort of another place that is a little bit more
self-contained.
Right. Yep.
Do you hunt on this land too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have to stalk it or is the animals just
around
here?
Obviously, they came. Yeah. I mean, obviously they come with it.
You live here. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and we do our best to nurture it. It's XM, and the way that works is, wildlife agencies all over do it. There's X amount of land, how much pasture you have, how much, basically, on 500 acres, there's X amount of food source. Mm-hmm. So a wildlife biologist will tell you, you need to keep your herd somewhere around, 50, 50 white-tail deer. It's sort of like one animal per 10 acres.
Okay.
And for the most part, they only count white-tail, but we've got pigs, we've got, dove, we got a few ducks that come in when it's cold. we do our best to manage that. And
what do you do? Do you have to like put food down or something?
Yeah,
or?
Well, I plant food plots. I'll do winter wheat, and then I'll do some stuff in the spring, and then we also supplemental, feed them, which is corn feeders, and then we also run protein feeders in the off season. Which again is just it's about trying to take good care of them and grow them big.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll film a couple shows out here as well when we do the McMillan River show. But, for the most part, I mean, my intention was just to get it just for us. And again, it's just pretty cool. I mean, Rebecca and I sit over there and have coffee every morning. And I mean, half the time, there's deer running around out here. It's just a cool sight to see.
Do you ever let your kids, how old is your son now?
He's 14. He'll be 15 in
So January. He's exploring age. Do you ever let him go explore around here? Is it like, be home by dark or what?
He's gone. I mean, he'll go. He now, is old enough and he's, taking hunter education that he'll go and sit down in a blind. He'll get up and, crack a dawn and go sit in a blind, or he'll ask to go sit in one, evening or whatever.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What a cool cool experience. What a cool place to grow up. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I hope so. Again, I mean, it's one of those things. It's,
pros and cons, right?
Well, I mean, it's, look, I mean, for us, it's, as we've homeschooled forever. I mean, the classroom's there in the back.
Mm-hmm.
We all hang out with each other. But it's about also teaching them a decent work ethic. Mm-hmm. We've got five dogs. We've got a gazillion cats. We've got two goats. We've got two horses.
Mm-hmm.
We got three guinea pigs. There's stuff to do before school starts at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
What I mean? And you're adding those horses to it. It takes
chores.
Some doing. Yep, exactly.
Let me ask you this, Sean. I was always curious about this. When you have kids that are homeschooled, and especially when you guys live so out in the middle of nowhere, what's the social element like? Do you take him into town? Are your kids in like youth groups or activity groups where they get like the social?
Yeah. Element? Well, one, I mean, the funniest thing is that when we first started homeschooling, we always heard that homeschoolers have difficulty socializing. Our kids are the two most outgoing. I mean, they are so comfortable around adults and, they go up to more people than we do. Obviously, Rebecca and I, we don't talk to anybody. How you doing? My name's Cameron. Son and daughter. So, we go to what we call, right here, we call D1. You know what that
is. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's where they go and they do their, from our homeschooling standpoint, we call that our PE. But they go there and they train. And then, obviously our son's, he's been doing a bunch of stuff in his youth.
His
church youth group. So, it's that's always seemed to be enough for them. And like I said, for whatever reason, they haven't grown weary of us. You know what I mean? And I don't, well, I mean, I guess it's because, again, like, you know, again, he and I, we'll go out and we'll see, we sit out in the blinds. You know, I mean, you know, your wife, I mean, the two horses are for Rebecca and Cheyenne, you know, and then they, you know, they've been doing that together. And again, we've always just sort of hung out with one another. And again, I mean, they got friends. I mean, they've got, you know, they've got a couple friends that they've met at Cheyenne's met, you know, going to horse lessons, and Cameron's met at church or through his youth group, and, you know, call and
Isn't
stuff
it
like
amazing?
That.
Like, my kids are all into horses too. We have a ranch right near where we live. And I just bought a horse for my wife too, which is a good present, but for the kids as well. But I mean, can you ride a horse at all?
I've ridden a little. I mean, many years ago, I guess it was, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago, right after I retired, I got asked to do a celebrity reining competition. You know, reining is a type of,
type of riding.
Yeah. Type of riding, you know, format.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, geez, I don't know how to do that. So, but you guys, don't worry, you know, we'll teach you. So I can ride.
Yeah,
I can ride. I'm no, you know.
It's amazing, though.
No expert, but I can set.
My thing
ride.
Was, I shouldn't say I can't. I just never have. But watching the kids, you know, 8-year-old kids, 11-year-old, my son, just they're doing jumps. And it's just so amazing when kids start getting that confidence to do something that we don't do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I always think,
well, heck, I mean, my son was racing cars.
That's what I was going to get.
We stopped doing it this year because it just got to be, you know.
Didn't he have like a crash or something?
Well, yeah, you know, yeah. He had plenty of crashes. But the thing is, this was, one, everybody was trying to get me, you know, in the cars. Oh, you got to try this. Like, no way, he's the racer. Mm-hmm. He had no problem going fast. I mean, and the problem near the end, why we took him out is that he was starting to get really good finishes. He was placing second, he was placing third, but boy, he was getting aggressive and he was doing some things out there. It was getting really hard to, you know, bad behavior was getting, you know, bad behavior gets rewarded a lot of times on the track.
You're cutting people off and stuff? Or?
Well, just driving aggressive. Okay. I mean, people call it, I mean, they call it racing. And the thing is, it's just, it was getting really difficult to, like, how do you parent that? You know what I mean? You know, you want him to do better. And he is doing better, but then he's doing some stuff on the track that you go, man, like, you know, that
kind of underhanded.
Well, not underhanded. It's just potentially that. I mean, if it doesn't go right, that can get dangerous.
Gotcha.
I mean, you remember when I showed you that little? Didn't I show you the little clip of him?
Yeah,
flipping and all that.
Yeah, yeah,
kind
yeah. Of, yeah.
Yeah. And so the thing is, and again, his car caught on fire. He handled it like a pro.
Wow.
He came out and he was okay, but then you start seeing him, and that was when he was in the middle of the pack. Now he's up front and he's doing better and he's getting more aggressive. It was just, I guess the thing is, it's more us than him. It scares us, and it was getting really hard to how do you properly parent that. You can't sit there and go, you know, don't do this, you know, but I want you to finish well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I gotta do this to finish well. I mean, it was taking us into an area where, like, we didn't know how to really do it, and we just said, "Dude, we gotta step away for now." And he wasn't happy at first, but then he got it when we got the chance to. I mean, he's a good kid; he really is. I mean, when we got a chance to sit down with him, like, and explain to him, like, you got to be able to see our side of it, man. We don't want to be, you know, those bad parents, man. Yeah, we're gonna support you and everything, but, like, you know, you're doing some of these things that, you know, you shouldn't be doing, and if it doesn't go well, you could really get hurt. Where you could hurt somebody else.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're talking about he was getting up, you know, he's getting to bigger tracks and he's doing, you know, he's doing up to 80, 90 miles an hour now. And it was just,
at,
you know,
14 years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, that's what I'm saying. At 14.
He didn't have a license yet.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, dude, you're still my baby.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
I mean,
come on.
Has he ever showed any interest in wanting to get into wrestling at all?
None.
Never had an inkling.
He's a heck of a drawer. I mean, right now, I mean, like, if
drawing?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. He's very artistic in that respect. And like, if you were to, I think if you were to ask him, like, what his dream job would be, his would be working for Marvel.
Oh, that's,
you know what I mean? I mean, he's
illustrator.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. We took him, went out to a Full Sail, took him on a tour. You know, and just showed him some of the stuff out there.
NXT is based out of.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I was going out there to do something for them anyway. It's like, hey, why don't we go out there? I mean, that's sort of an artsy school. Mm-hmm. And why don't we go out?
Yeah, it's an artist school, yes. Basically, a creative school. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and some of their graduates have gone on to work for Marvel and stuff like that. So we went out there, and you just got to see some of the process. And, you know, and again, they also, they could, like, at least get him, you know, tell him about some, you know, different computer programs and stuff like that that he can start to do. And, you know, it's like that's what, even in his youth group, you know, they're like, yeah, we want to, you know, start doing, you know, we want to start selling some shirts or whatever. Let's start designing some shirts.
All right,
of course, and of course, that's what he did. He's like, you know, he's like, I'd like to do that part. And so he designs all the shirts. They're like, holy cow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. I mean,
he just has, you know,
exploring himself.
Yeah,
right?
He's got that ability. And so, I mean, that's two things that we've always sort of, and you know, the driving's not always out. The only thing is, and he always goes, I don't want to drive on dirt. You know, I always tell him, like, you know, because the other one, we were going to Dallas. You know, we're going to Austin.
Start to travel.
We're going to Houston. We're going to Louisiana. It's like every weekend. It's like, dude, that's just
expensive, you know, too, right? It's expensive sport.
All of the above.
Yeah, expensive, yes. Activity or sport.
Exactly.
Whatever it is.
And so it's like, now if it's meant to be, you know, we'll do it somewhere here locally. And you know, all they got here is a dirt track. Like, I don't want to ride dirt.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned the Full Sail and going down to do something for WWE. First, I want to point out the numbers of your address is 1241. You know it's 1241.
Yeah, that's the office.
It's the office.
Oh, yeah, no, I saw that when we first, like, got it.
What are, like, the coincidences of that, right? That?
Yeah. Yeah. 1241 East Main Street, Stamford, right. Connecticut. Yeah, it's 0-6-905.
It's like, you can't get away from it, man. Uh-huh. For the rest of your life, you're going to be living under the shadow of the old man. What is your involvement with the WWE now? I know you pop in and out from time to time on TV when they need you. Behind the scenes, do you do anything?
No. I mean, no. I mean, like I said, you know, every once in a blue moon, somebody will call me and say, you know, do you have this date open? And they're thinking, you know, creative was thinking about using you for this, that, and the other. And if I've got the date open, which most of the time I do, I mean, there's only been a handful of times when, you know, I can't, you know, we're gone or we're hunting, you know, and usually that's in the fall. You know, and for the most part, Hunter always knows that. I mean, he, as best I can tell, has steered them away from a few phone calls, I guess.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
When
you know, there are times he's like, you can't just call him and act like he's gonna can drop everything. And
do you ask them what they want you to do, or you just show up and have no problem with it?
Well, I mean, for the most part, I mean, the first couple times it was just, you know, show up and do whatever. It didn't really matter. Then you know. Then there was not a big deal, but the Bryan Danielson stuff. A lot of it just didn't really make any sense, and even that I went ahead and did because I thought, oh man, I mean, what the heck? Who cares? I mean, I don't mean to be when I say who cares and I don't worry about stuff. Stuff just doesn't really bother me.
It's not like it used to be. Dissecting every little detail,
exactly.
Right?
You know, I just don't. Yeah, I don't worry about my character.
I have no problem with that, but my character would never.
Yeah, right.
Do that.
Exactly. Yeah,
because that's when you came
personally,
back.
Personally, my character, HBK, he says no.
Yeah, that's when you came back.
Spoken to him.
Super kicked Danielson, and of course, that sparked a whole bunch. Oh, it's going to be Danielson versus HBK.
Exactly. And the thing is, at least I talked him into, like, letting him, you know, because I was just supposed to kick him and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, at least let me come on tomorrow night and let him stretch me. You know, at least let him get something back, the poor dude. And there's no answer to this. And what, you know, it's like, well, you know, okay. I mean, we didn't know you'd be available Monday. And it's like, well, I mean, I'd like to do this for, you know, for Brian.
For him, yeah.
And so anyway, and then there was one other time I got called to San Antonio. This guy was supposed to be on the show. And so I drive all the way there, and they sort of changed it. You're not on the show, but we want you to do the
dark match.
dark match.
pre-show.
Yeah, the pre-show. And I said, and you do the pre-show, but there's also an after show, the one that comes on after all. And I said, look, I don't mean to. I'm not trying to be difficult. You know very well I'll do anything for you, but I said, but it didn't come all. You know, I don't live in this neighborhood anymore. It's a little bit of a drive for me now, and I don't, you know, and I don't certainly don't want to be doing anything afterwards. You know, and have to be home at 2 and 3 in the morning.
You know, it's interesting.
And I said, long story short, I just said, look, I'm not, you know, you don't really need me, and it's okay. I'm not offended, but I did drive all this way. I'm going to go ahead and go home. And oh, you got to do the pre-show. That's important. And I said, like, it's not important.
Yeah.
And he said, no, but it is. And then and I'm not going to say who was on. I said, look, I'm out there with this person, this person, and this person. Mm-hmm. I said, do those other two people say importance to you?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you've got me there. Have a safe trip. And so I just, and that was, and strangely enough, though, I think that was the last time I've been called. I'm not sure.
You know, when you said, I don't live in this neighborhood anymore, I wasn't thinking of it literally. You literally don't live in that neighborhood of San Antonio. I was thinking you were meaning, I don't live in this neighborhood of this world of wrestling, this mindset.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, when knowing you now, I mean, super laid back, super cool, and you always were, but when you're in the biz, especially when we worked, there was a lot of fire there and a lot of, not dissecting, but let's make this right.
Right. Well, let's make it good. Let's make it right. But I mean, I was doing it.
Yeah, you were in
it. I mean,
it.
And that's the only thing. I was an active player then. I'm not now. Yeah. And that's why.
You don't live in that neighborhood.
No.
Anymore.
Well, yeah, right. But and I don't. And see, and to me, at the very least, I don't want to come back and make it all about me either.
Right.
You know what I mean? And make it my neighborhood again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have no desire to do that. I don't think it's fair to do that. Mm-hmm. It's someone else's neighborhood. All those things. You know what I mean? And so. And that's why, to me, like I said, there have been times it's like, you know, I'd rather not do anything than come in and make something worse, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. and that was the only part that I was, you know, with the Brian stuff is like, you know, I'm coming in, you know, and it's like, everybody knows, you know, that I trained him. You can't just have me kick somebody and not think it's going to be a fairly big deal. And again, not saying like, hey, got to understand, I'm Shawn Michaels, I'm a pretty big deal. You know,
But you kind of are, though.
But I'm just saying, you can't bring back any kind of Hall of Famer, so to speak, any kind of guy that was really something, especially the guy, you know, a guy who's certainly connected to this guy.
Yes.
We're telling that story that I'm connected to, and then I kick him, and then I leave. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it just didn't, and, you know, so I at least still care enough to like, well, gosh, let me at least, let me try to button up something for you here before I go.
Sure.
And so, you know, that's what I tried to do, but it was just
when you first I mean, like you mentioned, you trained Brian Danielson. Did you like? I mean, you can never guess. Okay, this guy is going to be, you know, top of the top. Did you see something in him from the start, though?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, it was very simple. You know, that first class which he was a part of was him, Kendrick, and Lance McCade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Those three guys.
I mean, there was another guy in there. We called him Shooter Schultz. I mean, he was a talented young man. He just didn't stay. You know, and there were other guys that were just underneath them, but it was like, you know, you could see that, you know, Lance, Bryan, and Brian would be three guys that certainly looked like they were willing to go ahead and pay the price and wait and let, you know, again, and starve and all those type of things and do. And then I remember telling both him and Brian, Kendrick, look, you guys need to understand something. He's bigger.
Yeah.
He's going to get the first look.
Yeah.
It's going to be a longer road for you guys because you guys are going to, you know, you're going to get the me treatment. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, but all I can do is tell you what somebody told me, and that was DiBiase, you know, saying that eventually talent, you know, will make its way to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stick with it, then I think, you know, he was a hard worker. You know, and I always throw Kendrick in there with him as well because they were both, those two guys pushed each other all the time.
I mean,
and they were constantly there all the time. The absolute two best guys in the world, you know, to train or, you know,
to have each other to,
Just, and to also for you to be a part of it, they just, you know, they came hungry, they stayed hungry, they were always ready, really always up, never, couldn't get enough of it, and so it's hard not to, you know, it's hard not to gravitate to them.
You talked about, too, because you can understand, not the plight, but understand what they're going to go through because they're small guys, and they were smaller than you and I.
Yes.
And when I started, I was too, quote unquote, too small, and that was 4 or 5 years after you started. How was it for you starting out and, you know, even when you first came in the WWE and all this stuff? Like, did you ever think, like, I mean, sure, you believe in your ability, but did people kind of look, oh, he's just way too small?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Marty and I got it really bad. I mean, it was very simple. I mean, because one of the first teams we had to work with, I remember in the Garden, it was Demolition.
Yeah.
And we couldn't, those guys, it's like, geez, those guys are small.
Yeah.
Everything we did to them, that we were allowed to knock them down had to be double. Everything. Mm. Everything.
You were told that by them or by the agents?
By them.
Okay.
you know, by them and by the agents. And it was just, you know, the sizing was really, really important back then.
Yes.
And you couldn't help but to get that stigma. And it's funny because all these years later to have guys like, you know, again, and I'm not saying, you know, as you know, I'm not huge or anything, but I mean, my prime, you know, dude, I was 6'1".
That's what I mean.
You're 215 or 220.
Still a big guy.
Guys now are 5'9".
Yes.
They're a buck 85.
180, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And they go, well, Shawn Michaels, man. Like, dude, like, that's why Nash gets so much heat, because Nash always goes, look, he was 4 inches taller than you and 20
right.
and 30 or 30 pounds heavier.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And the thing is, and he moved like you.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's a difference. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, and so, but.
I get the time of people like, you know, I didn't think you'd be this tall. Like, did you think I was like a midget? Like,
yeah.
Still 6 feet tall.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is a big person, but just not in the wrestling world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, you know, especially me, mm-hmm. when, you know, surely, again, in my prime and all that stuff, was making my living with guys like Nash and
right.
Ramon.
Right.
I mean, Scott Hall's 6'8".
Yes.
You know what I mean? And Scott Hall worked with me like you and I worked together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, if I came off the ropes and hit Scott with a tackle, he went down.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? Scott was like, I'm not going to work like that.
Yeah.
You know,
well, the business was changing at that point, too. You're talking about 95.
For sure.
But you're talking about the late 80s when you guys first came in, like you said. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Talking about rockers being, you know, the smaller looking guys, but still big guys, but working with the Twin Towers and working with Demolition and working
right.
with guys that are 6 foot five, 6 feet, Haku and Barbarian.
Correct.
Those type of things.
And they all were really big. Sorry about the
That's
phone
all right.
ringing there. It's funny. We know we'll never get phone calls here.
They know I'm here.
When you're here. Because certainly nobody calls for me, I can promise you that much. The thing is, but they, you know, to all of their credits, they were big men. All of them were big men. But I'm not saying it like, I'm not trying to diminish Demolition by saying, it all made sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Size was mm-hmm. you know, was an issue then, and again, and for us, it was just the first time we ever dealt with it. We never really, it was never so sort of really out there, you know. I mean, it was like if we'd worked with bigger guys before, it made sense to us.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're going to double drop kick you to knock you down, mm-hmm. but we didn't run into it a lot. You know, we come off, you know, Buddy Rose and Doug Summers, where we were doing double stuff anyway, but not because they were big, but because it looked cool.
Yeah, it was a cool thing. Yeah,
you know, and the thing is, we were going to do that, but then to have it emphasized, sort of, you know, again, to be like, you know, I can't go down for that, or mm-hmm. or when you did do something like that, a guy dropped to a knee or something.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and you notice that, and you go, wow. And again, it was just something new, mm-hmm. honestly, and that's sort of what took you back. It's not as if we had a problem with it, or, you know, it bothered us. It was just one of those things that you go, well, okay, that's.
Did it give you a chip on your shoulder, an attitude, being a small guy, but knowing that you're, you know, more excited than most of these guys?
Well, yeah.
I know it did for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I'm sure that, you know, it's sort of like if I say, you know, we'll do a double drop kick and then you can go down. If it's my idea, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you say I'm not going down unless you double drop kick me, then you go, well, now I don't want to double drop kick you. You know. And so yeah. It made sense, mm-hmm. and so, but yeah, I think you do. I think you get the chip a little bit, but more importantly, I would say I think the thing that sunk into me was like, there's no way you're going to make it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Certainly, mm-hmm. I mean, or this is, you know, this is.
You're thinking to yourself, I'm never going to make it because I'm too small.
Yeah, this is certainly. As far as you go here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this
I can only get
team.
So far.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where the chip and the anger and all that kind of stuff sort of comes in. That, you know, especially as you know, again, as you sort of see, like, well, you know, even Marty and I felt we were, you know, a better team than, you know, certain other people. And
sure.
if the only thing that was going to hold us back was our size, that certainly didn't seem fair.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Hawkins. Talk is Jericho.
I'm here with Shawn Michaels at his ranch in the middle of nowhere, Texas, like literally out in the middle of nowhere. Here's something I can never figure out. I grew up a huge fan of the Rockers, you and Marty, and I could never understand why you guys never won the tag team champions, because you guys, you watch the shows, people cheering for you, going nuts, you always do cool moves and do all this great stuff. I remember one time a guy did a drop down, you jumped on his back and did a backflip off his back.
Yeah.
I only saw it once. I don't know why you did. I was just like, I can do this. Look at me.
Well, that's one of the reasons why you sort of only do that once, because you do it and you go, why would you? What's the psychology behind that?
It's cool that you did it.
I never forgot. Just want to let you know that I can. Yeah. But I probably shouldn't do that anymore because it doesn't make any sense.
I used to hang out at Gold's Gym in Winnipeg.
That's like, you always tell the story. I love it.
I went up to you and I was like, hey, Sean, how do you do a backflip off the top rope? You just go up there and do it, brother. And then fast forward four or five years, and here I am in a barn in Okotoks, Alberta, go to the top rope. I'm like, well, Sean just said go for it. I did this big overextended backflip, and I landed on my feet, and I fell backwards on my back, and I did another flip over. I was like, I went so far with it. I did a flip and a half.
But the thing is, if you go back and you know how to do the roll all the way through, you still get up. You can still cover it up pretty good. It's only if you fall short.
That's right. That's right. But, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You could show that you could do that stuff. But why did you never get to be the champions?
Well, I mean, that's one of those, somehow, whatever, the internet guys know all the reasons behind that stuff, but I never I never heard a definitive reason, why the Rockers weren't. Obviously, everybody knows the story of when they were finally going to with the Hart Foundation, and then the ring fell apart and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you guys actually won the titles on a taping.
Right, on a Saturday Night Main Event, 2 out of 3 fall, and the rope broke, and me and Brett, we tell that story all the time. It's just, just one of those things, because, all of us back then, everybody's still getting along. And it's like the Hearts never really got to work with us that much. And they knew we could have a good match for those.
Yeah, because they were smaller guys, too, quote unquote. Well, sure. Anvil being 250, 260.
But we could bump for Anvil and still do cool stuff with Brett and, a perfect sort of combination there. And, of course, Saturday Night Main Event, so in all of our minds, we're like, we're going to go out there and tear this bad boy up. And then, of course, everything just goes to hell in a handbasket.
So they couldn't show the match?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, remember we finished it. We went ahead and won, so to speak. But then they just did everything they could to try to sort of piece it together. And I think they came to the conclusion, there's just no way. And then, of course, we got the word that we got to get the belts back, and then they're going another direction, and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. You know what I mean? I love your laugh. It's just hilarious. It's
the ultimate dusty finish.
But the thing is, and the reason, for you kids scoring along at home, one of the reasons Chris laughs so deeply at us, because you know very well, it's like one of the things you wait for, and now you're screwed. And it adds to that fire that you're already sort of bitter about.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know what I'm laughing at the most is my first.
And we can laugh now, right?
At the time, though. It's what kind of evil fate happens at the rope breaks? Or the reason why I'm laughing is my first appearance at Madison Square Garden, first ever live show, and I was supposed to just go out and do a promo. And as you know, in Madison Square Garden, Vince is there. He's at the curtain. He watches everything. And I went out there and I grabbed the microphone, started cutting the scathing promo. And then 10 seconds in, my mic goes out. And then it goes back on. And then it goes out. So and then now the booze turned to laughing, turned to get out of here. And I walk back to the curtain. Vince is like, didn't go very well. I'm like, why, God, why?
didn't go very well. You think?
Yeah, gee, thanks, buddy. Get some microphones at work, pal.
Thanks, Captain Obvious.
Mr. Billionaire. What was your relationship with Vince back in those days? Did you have one at all when you were in the Rockers?
No. I mean, our first dealing with it was again, the firing. The first time, you know, nice boots, you know, hey, thanks, that they're made for walking. And then, of course, oh, just kidding, come on in here. And then he fired us. You know what I mean? That's always one of my favorite stories.
These boots are made for walking.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
You know, we were out there, you know, back then you had the old, you know, the rattlesnake skin boots and all that.
Yeah,
and
wearing on the outside of the jeans.
Of course.
I still do. Yeah. They're just cowboy boots now, mutton boots.
Snake boots now, man. But, you know, we're out there, and again, he comes out of the office. And this was back when the office was in Greenwich, not in Stanford.
Wow.
It was the original. Yeah, oh, yeah.
What was that office? Was it just a smaller place?
Much smaller.
Just like Howard Finkel working the desk.
But, I mean, Kevin peeked his head around the corner and goes, nice boots. We went, oh, thanks. He goes, they're made for walking. We went, oh, no. And he goes, just kidding. Come on in here. And then, like you said, he brought us in, sat us down, and said, sorry. They're not going to let you stay. The boys, they're going to run you out.
So oh, the boys.
Yeah, he, yeah, you know, he put up the heat on the boys.
What, were you guys like partying too much? Or were you too crazy?
No,
at the time,
no.
Or?
I mean, honestly, the real story is the first night, you know, we didn't even want to go out. Pat Patterson's telling us you need to go out. You need to make friends with the boys. We had a bunch of heat coming in. They'd heard about us, yada, yada, yada.
Heat because of your reputation?
Yes, correct. Gotcha. Yes. And so we went to... where everybody was at. They were in a hotel near the airport, in the bar, yada, yada, yada. We're up there. We're not talking. Finally, we see it's Powers, Davey Boy, and somebody else. Can't remember. We go down there. Oh, yeah. And then Jimmy Jack Funk, Jesse Barr.
Jesse Barr, yeah.
Comes over and, hey, you guys are big partiers. And we're, no, we're just, you know, trying to take it easy. I mean, none of us had anything to drink, Marty and I. And, you know, come on, here you guys, let me put it. And he takes a bite out of a glass.
Oh,
I'm like, holy, oh yeah.
So like, old school brother.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. So we're like, oh my goodness, this is, you know, this is getting out of hand quickly. You know, and we're like, no. He goes, come on. He takes another one. We're like, oh man. So I said, okay, you want to support? I grab a glass. Bam, break it on my head. I said, how's that? And then, you know, I exit. And the next day, the story goes around that we just like tore up this bar.
Oh.
You know, the wrestling fish story.
Yeah.
That single glass shatter turns into, by the time we got fired, it was a month later, we got booked in Continental Wrestling down in Alabama. By the time we got down there, one of the grapplers,
Len Denton or
Tony Anthony. We came in, and I won't say use all the language he used, but he goes, "You dumb son of a bitch! You know, you have people wait their whole careers to get to the WWE. You guys get there and you blow it." He said, "Did you really light your couch on fire and throw it out the window into the pool?" And we're like, "What?"
At that point, you're like, yes, we did. Yeah. What do you say, right?
But yeah, we're just like, oh, my goodness, what is it? You know, how does it get into this? But that's, I mean, and as you know, that's the wrestling business.
Telephone, telegraph, tele-wrestler.
That's right. Yep. Oh, my goodness. And, of course, you know, yeah.
Well, how long was it before you guys got invited back, or how did you get invited back?
A year and a half. It got to where we went down to Continental. Back to Mid-South, back to the AWA. We were going back and forth between AWA and Mid-South. You know, we were the champs of both. And then, if I recall, it was like Vern trying to, like, sign everybody to some kind of contract thing that, like, with no money or whatever. And we, you know, we made a call. And unbeknownst to us, and, of course, Pat Patterson, you know, would tell us this story years later. You know, like I see him now and he still tells the story.
Yeah.
But every month he would go to Vince and say, can we give those Rockers a try again? And then Vince would say, no, they're dead to me.
Wow.
They're dead to me.
Just from that one?
Yes.
It's so weird how Vince gets a bee in his bonnet about, like, what the hell's the big deal? Vince probably broke 10 glasses over his head that night.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, and he just said, Pat, they'll never, I mean, he would, you know, every month he would go, Pat, they'll never be here. They're dead to me.
They're dead to
me. And then finally one day. He says, you're just gonna come to me all the time about this. He goes, well, he goes, I think that, you know, I think they've got some talent. Yeah, they're trouble and yada yada yada, but you know they've got talents. And he said, all right, it's on you. You, they're your responsibility. And we came back under like double secret probation or whatever.
How influential was Pat on your career?
Oh, come on. You know.
Yeah,
I mean, he's the
Jedi. Yeah. He's Yoda.
He is. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was, you know, that was the thing. And it was a shame because, you know, obviously now, I mean, he's done it with you. He did it with Brett. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, he did it with me. And the, obviously the, you know, the differences that Brett and I had while we were there, that hurt him so bad. Mm-hmm. What hurt him the worst is that, you know, Brett thought Pat had taken part in something,
and he
never did.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we knew specifically that you couldn't tell Pat.
Because Pat wouldn't be able to
he couldn't
with
do
it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Because he's such a sweetheart, as you know. Mm-hmm. But Pat Patterson, I mean, again, all that, you know, obviously all that stuff aside, was, I mean, tremendous. I mean, especially when, I mean, he was good with Marty and I, but then, you know, with my singles career, you know, he was... And I mean, again, you know, he's the guy that, you know, even whether people liked it, disliked it, you know, the ideas that he came up with, you know, the marathon match, mm-hmm. the, you know, all of that stuff, you know, the Rumble. I mean, the Royal Rumble is Pat Patterson's, you know.
Just how to put together a match. You know, I'd worked 9 years before I got in the WWE. You worked for a long time, too. But just didn't know. I didn't understand a lot of that stuff. And he really.
I tell everybody the story of the day. That he sort of, it was just, to me, encapsulated everything and changed my style forever. And it was, and it, you know, nothing, it had nothing to do with the flips or the movement, but just my outlook on everything. Mm-hmm. We were in White Plains. It was back when we, you know, again, we used to do, you know, the long TVs with what, a number
like
of days.
4 hours or 5 hours of TV.
Yes, and do that for 2 days.
Gotcha.
And it, then... Back then, people knew what the dark match was, and the dark match is coming. They're leaving the building. The dark match that night was me and Scott, me and Razor. And he goes, tonight, just I want you to do a double knockout. You guys go down, and you don't move. I mean, no matter what, don't move. Don't move a muscle. Just lay there and wait for those people. I'm like, what? I mean, dude, it's a dark match. We're going to go out there, bing, 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 boop, bing, bing, bing. And call it a night. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's like, no, I want you to try this. You got to trust me. Just lay there. Those people will come. They're not going to do anything but leave the building. Come and just lay there. Don't you move. You just wait. And if they don't, you don't do anything until they start coming. And then as they come, you slowly get up. Mm-hmm. And you know how he describes it.
Yeah.
And then you go back and forth. Boom. Ga-ging.
Ba-boom. Ga-ging.
And we're like, oh, my goodness. A dark match. I mean, they've seen 50, you know,
yeah,
squash
literally
matches.
50 matches, right?
Oh, yeah, and squash matches. And, mm-hmm. you know, with a, you know,
every move, every entrance, every tie spot.
Oh, my goodness. Like, Pat, for you, I mean, you know, whatever. We'll do anything for you. So, I mean, so Scott and I do it. Boom. I mean, and you could hear a pin drop. And we're like, oh, God. And to this day, I don't know how long it was. It felt like forever. But then all of a sudden, I mean, we saw people leave it, and then, I mean, they're coming back into their seats. And then all of a sudden.
And here comes the roar.
Yeah, they started coming. It was like, oh, my God. He's right. You know, and we got up. And obviously from that point on, the double knockout was a part of every. But I mean, but it sort of what it encapsulated was, I mean, just the psychology of, you know, of really, you know, you taking control of those people, mm-hmm. taking control of their emotions, and you dictating to them, no matter what they say, no matter what you know, even in spite of what you feel,
mm-hmm.
go out there and do this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and more than anything, taking risks, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
take a risk, try some
new stuff.
Yeah, you know, and so it was. I don't know. It was just sort of. I don't know. Just very illuminating,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, golly. I mean, if you can do that here, White Plains, at the end of...
Yeah, at the end of 5 hours,
you know,
whatever
if
it is.
I get to, you know, I mean, if I get to go on whatever,
mm-hmm.
third or fourth, or even if I'm going on last and nobody else has done it, you know, or whatever, or you tell anybody, don't anybody do any double knockouts.
You know, I was back this summer for a little run. I did the thing with Bray Wyatt. And, you know, great character, and he's pretty agile, pretty good worker, but still a young guy. Mm-hmm. And we would do matches on the house show, and... do some false finishes. And I remember when you and I worked house shows, in between the false finishes, rather than get up, you said, just stay down, just stay and just don't move and just kind of sell. And I was doing the same thing with him. Like, just stay there. Don't move. Stay. Don't come over. Stop. That. Listen, man, you got to take more time. But that's all the pat. It's the same concept as what you're saying from that, you know?
Well, and that's what gets you doing that is because, I mean, you sort of figure out, like, I took this much time this time and they came here. I wonder if I take this much time here, if they'll do this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm beginning to feel with it and I don't know. I mean, again, and honestly, like telling somebody, like some guys, you can say don't move, but they, you know, they think that means like moving the cellar. Yeah. No, don't move means don't move. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, you know, zero nicely say, I thought I should sell. I didn't say move. I didn't say sell. I said don't move. You know, again, and the only reason I'm saying don't move is because it's important.
Yeah,
it's important to the match.
Just don't move
because movement. They see movement. They're gonna, you know, again, it's like a cat. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he sees something moving. He's gonna look over there at it, and now you've distracted him.
Yes,
you know what I mean.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, again, I know, you know, you don't have to know what I'm doing here. Just follow. You know?
Was it hard sometimes? Like, you know, I mean, actually, I get yelled at this all the time. And you kind of got it sometimes too, but you're calling spots and stuff. But sometimes when you're working with people that weren't very good, you would have to call spots. I remember specifically with Vader and with Shamrock that weren't, you know, they're good guys and working hard. But you would always have to, like, tell them, like, start right there.
Yeah. Well, and obviously back then I went way overboard. You know, not doing it obviously the right way, everybody knows the story, a ton more emotional than
yes,
but I mean, like, even with you, I mean, there were times, I mean, I wasn't yelling at
no,
but I whatever, just trying to, like, hey, you know, don't,
in the course of the match,
don't, you know, stay down, you know what I mean, and I don't mean, you know, damn you, Chris Jericho, you know what I mean, just, you know, again, it's, I mean. And of course, you're obviously wonderful about it because you know very well. I'm gonna, you know, explain my mindset. You know, I can't do it out here. You know what I mean? But I mean, and the important thing is that you're always respectful and always trusted me enough to know, like, you know, dipsticks. He's got a reason why he's doing this. I mean, I'll figure it out later and he'll let me know. I did, and obviously, way too, you know, overboard. But I mean, I guess the thing is, one of the things I'm guilty of is I've got this in here, I'm going, this is an awesome idea.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know what I mean? It's just, I got it. This is going to be beautiful. You know, it's, and then you mess that up. It's like, I didn't handle it very well. But I mean, again, like, you, and I've always heard you, again, you've always, you tell a story a bunch about ours, you know, our last angle, I will call it, whatever, that last one where everything went so well. But you know how long that process was.
So amazing, right?
But we had fun. I mean, but, and there are times, you know, like, I like that butt. You know what I mean? And we'd go back. And I, like, then, and I guarantee you, I bet you, you're like that now with everybody, which is like,
which drives,
that's good, but I mean, let me,
which drives them nuts now, because no one really does that.
Yeah,
says, okay, we'll do this, but
well, and that's the thing. But you and I also, you know, and I guess that, I mean, I can't say purposely I did it with you because I knew you enjoyed the process. You and I have always had such a real, very good relationship. In that, it always certainly appeared to me that you did enjoy the process.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're at TV, and it's like, we're going to do what else?
Yeah.
Here all day.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean? Right.
You know what I mean? So we can sit here and pick this thing apart and mess around with it. And plus, I think, you know, again, we were, you know, in a situation where, you know, it just sort of, we were going to do something else with you guys, but this is sort of something happened here. So let's just, let's go with it for a week and see what happens. And so we'd go with it for a week, and then we'd do something, and we'd add something to it, and then they go, well, that would actually work out. So it never really had a direction anyway, so that fell in your and I's favor, because therefore we're taking some of their responsibility off their hands if we'll come up with a lot of the stuff. But you know what I mean? It's like, we want to keep doing something with you guys, but we weren't planning on doing this. And again, no fault of theirs. It was just one of those things that it was supposed to be me and Dave, and I think you and I were doing a one-shot, a one-off, and then I was going to go with Dave and to go do something else, and then all of a sudden it went a different direction.
The idea was, and it's funny because I just wrote about this in my last book, And I wanted to kind of remember a lot of, like, I remember a lot of it. But what I did, which I don't usually do for my books, is I went online and I looked up, I Googled, you know, Michael's Jericho timeline, 2008. Mm-hmm. And some guy had written a timeline of week by week what we did from April to October.
Yeah.
That was the length of the story.
Wow.
And there was so much detail in there.
Yeah.
Some I remembered, some I did not.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's talk about that. Because in my opinion, and I'm not saying this with any type of ego, that was by far was the best storyline I'd ever done.
Yeah, well, it was fun.
I think it's one of the best storylines in WWE history.
Well, no, you've always said, like, they need to do a DVD of that.
I really think they do.
Like, I'll just take another DVD for the royalties.
But not anymore. It's the network. We don't get royalties anymore.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But it started out was I was kind of floundering as a babyface. I came up with this new character. I wanted to turn heel. And they said, okay, you turn heel on Shawn. As the guest referee in the Shawn Batista match.
Right.
And then the next month you guys will do a one-off and then you move on. And I think both of us were like, that's a waste. Because we had worked at WrestleMania 2003.
Right.
And
well, it just seemed confusing. Like, because, I mean, I think that was the time I got, I don't know, maybe, no, it wasn't. No, what it was. I can't remember what it was. It was just I was doing something with Dave and they were just putting you in there for one and they wanted to, like, turn you heel in that, but then you were going to go off. And I was like, we can't turn heel on me and then go off with me. So we need to think of something better than that. And then at the same time, it's like, we want you to beat Dave, but it can't be sort of, we don't, you know, obviously you can't beat Dave, you know, sort of fair and square. And so then it was like, well, I mean, and then, and again, I want to throw one of those things. You know, I don't know. It might have been Pat, but somebody, like, you know, can you do, like, a, you know, like the thing where you tweak your knee and you're hurting? And of course, Pat was doing it from the you're really hurt type thing. And then all of a sudden, somehow it was like, well, what if it's, you know, which again, I don't even know. I mean, just that's how all the cool stuff comes up, though. It's like, but what if it's like, you know, how about we do that, though? I, because Pat wanted me, you know, obviously you're not really hurt, but you go down working like you hurt your knee. And, you know, and then obviously, and then I was thinking, like, well, then I've got to sell my knee for the next couple of weeks,
right?
You know, from a shoot standpoint, I'm like, I'll be at home. I'm not going to be limping or whatever. And then, you know, and then I've still got these matches to go with these guys. You got to work on TV, and I'm going to be getting another knee. But what if it's, you know, what if it's I tweak it, but am I hurt? But I've been hurt enough that people think I'm hurt. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But then it turned out to be a real work.
Right.
We didn't know for sure. You, you know what I mean?
And that was the beauty, because I remember Vince was like, well, he goes, what kind of finish are you going to do? And we're like, what do you want? He goes, I don't know. I just booked. You got to figure it out. And so we did.
Yeah. Well, that was the one, like, all the way up to Darnia's pay-per-view goal. We didn't know what we were doing.
Still trying to figure it out. And that's when Batista went to powerbomb you. You landed on your feet, tweaked your knee.
Yeah.
Now, like you said, is he really hurt? Is he not? And what happened was the perfect storm, because that's the time when I was starting this new character. And I started calling the people. I started calling you a hypocrite. Mm-hmm. And I started calling the people hypocrites for believing in you. Because eventually the payoff was that you weren't really hurt.
Right.
You super kicked me and danced away.
Yeah.
And people were still cheering. I'm like, but he's the liar.
Yeah, no,
Shawn's the liar in this.
And that was then that's what was so cool about it. Then we're sitting there going, like, holy cow, this is the greatest, neatest thing in the world, because we're making them still cheer me, and I'm the guy. I'm the guy that did the bad thing. And we're making them boo you, and you called out. You know, you called
the
right
truth,
but because you're being so self-righteous about it, they're going to boo you. And how do you not have fun with that?
That's right.
Because it's totally opposite of everything
that was going on.
You know, well, I mean, but and anything that, you know, that's, you know, certainly for me, anyway, that's not the type of baby face I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm goody two-shoes baby
face. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
it gave you an edge, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, just to be able to, you know, be like, it gave HBK a shrewdness.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
It did.
Yeah, and so, anyway, obviously, we had a field day with that, and with that kind of mindset going into it. It was very, you know, an off-kilter, anti-hero-ish,
Was something that had never really been seen before. Because I think, you know, the best type of heels always have a kernel of truth, like you said. It's like if you were walking across the street and I pulled you back because you almost got hit by a bus. But every day for the rest of your life, hey, remember when you almost got run over by a bus and I saved your life? Hey, remember when you almost got run over by that bus like an idiot and I saved you? You'd be like, shut up. I wish you still let me get hit by the bus already.
Now it's not worth it. You know what I mean?
You throw me in front of the bus.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's why it works so well. But then the turn of when I threw you into that, into the Jerritron 5000, That was another classic. I watched a lot of this back because I didn't ever watch it, but man, it was great.
Yeah.
Well, that was,
I remember you coming to me saying, like, this is my sort of my barbershop
thing. Yes.
You know what I mean? I'm thinking, you know, this is something I'm thinking of doing. Well, I think
when you kicked Marty through the barbershop window. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, as you look to our angle, there were certain times that throughout it, you know, whatever, as it started to look like it was starting to taper off, we'd throw some fire on the gas. There's some gasoline on the fire. You know what I mean? And obviously, you know, throwing my wife in there and that thing, and I think that's just set it to took it to a level of like, you know, like, oh,
yes,
somebody's going to get killed. You know.
All right, we're going to stop right here. We're going to pick back up on Friday because what's coming next is the reason why Vince McMahon no longer allows blood in the ring in the WWE. It's Sean and Mai's fault. He owns it. He explains it, and you'll hear it on Friday. And in case you're wondering, yes, I rinsed with Smart Mouth before sitting down for this monumental marathon conversation with my favorite performer of all time, my biggest rival, Shawn Michaels. I can't show up at HBK's ranch in the middle of nowhere, Texas, with bad breath, man. Come on. What kind of couth would I have? What kind of etiquette is that? You don't go to someone's house with bad breath. That's a rule. It's a rule that I'm starting now. I use Smart Mouth activated mouthwash to get rid of the bad breath, get rid of the stinky winky bad breath, because you don't realize there's a really good chance that your breath stinks. That's not even bad. It stinks. There's nothing worse than when you have your 8-year-old daughter say, Daddy, you've got stinky breath. She don't say that anymore because now I use Smart Mouth activated mouthwash and it can help you too. It blocks bad breath for a full 12 hours so you're never caught with less than fresh breath. And get this, Smart Mouth can even prevent morning breath when you rinse at night, just in case you're waking up next to someone and you want to get a little hibbity-dibbity. You got to have clean breath, man, right? And if you're going to get up and go to the bathroom and gargle, it kind of kills the vibe. You want to wake up with that fresh, minty taste. Smart Mouth can do that for you. It can go all day and all night. It's the Ric Flair of mouthwashes. You just mix the two solutions together, then you rinse twice a day to activate powerful bad breath blockers. It's the secret to the longest lasting fresh breath. Don't get breath blocked. Get Smart Mouth and get fresh with 12 hours of fresh, clean breath. You find the Smart Mouth activated mouthwash in the shiny green box at CVS Pharmacy or anywhere you shop or smartmouth.com and go do it now and feel confident and good about yourself and good about your breath. All right. If you were here right now, you'd witness my fresh breath firsthand. Okay. Pretend you got smell-o-vision in your house. Here we go. How's it smell? Right? Minty fresh, like a cool winter's day. That's because of Smart Mouth activated mouthwash. All right? Are you proofs in the pudding? Are you convinced? Are you also convinced that Shawn Michaels Part 2 with the Heartbreak Kid coming up on Friday is going to be an amazing show, just like Part 1 is? You're darn right it's going to be. Part 2, we're going to discuss the angle we did in 2008 where I accidentally punched his wife, Rebecca. We're going to talk about WrestleMania 19 where we stole the show and had the best match on that night. The evolution of the HBK character and what made him so popular back then and still to this day. Plus, we'll talk about Shawn's new book, Wrestling for My Life, The Legend, The Reality, and the Faith of a WWE Superstar. It just dropped today. It's a great read. You got to go check it out. You also got to come check out the Cinderblock Party World Tour 2015, Fozzie and the Dirty Youth. It's coming up, going to Europe. If you live overseas, you have got to come check this out. It's the show that Beyond Magazine said is the best live gig we've ever seen. That is a true story. March 4th, it starts in Belfast. 5, Cork. 6, Dublin. 7, Nottingham. 8, Wolverhampton. 9, Manchester. 10, Glasgow. 11, London. 12, Bristol. 13, Exeter. 14, Southampton. 15, Brighton. Head over to Paris on March 17th. Go over to Switzerland, Pratteln, the 18th. 19, Munich. 20, Mannheim. 21, Bochum, Germany. Get all information, tickets to the shows, and the greatest VIP experience you will ever have at FozzyRock.com. Do not miss out. You are going to regret it if you do. And thank you one last time for doing all your shopping through my Amazon links. I appreciate it. Easiest way to support the show so I can keep doing it for you for free. You know how to find the Amazon links. I say it over and over again. Podcast1.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the pagey wagey. Then you click on Talk is Jericho. You see all three of the Amazon links in the UK, the USA, the Canada A. Every time you do that, Amazon helps out this show. No extra fees, no hidden charges. We're just getting your shopping done, helping me out in the process. us and keeping this show alive. All right, another great episode. We'll be back on Friday, but in the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. Part two with HBK coming up on Friday, and you're not going to believe what we're going to be talking about.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.